Hello and welcome to season 4, episode 6 of The Dive. I'm Kobe, joined by my friends Azael and Mark Z. Welcome on this momentous occasion.
Notice how when he said friends, he only pointed to me, even though he said what? You.
I clearly did this.
No, he pointed me.
That hand got closer to him than me. Yeah, so I'm therefore.
Mark's with me.
Physical touch is really.
No, see, now this isn't pity. Now it's a pity friendship with Mark. We all know.
fun too, man.
Kobe likes me best.
Jerks.
Welcome to. Excuse me, let me do this again. I am joined by a literal world champion.
Thank you. Thank
you. And Mark Lee from Hotline League.
Equally as prestigious.
True.
And the prestigious moment that we are all partaking in today is we have just passed the halfway point of the spring split.
Halfway through. Here we go.
Good job.
Congratulations.
We did it.
Jinx, give me your coffee.
I don't have any. Okay. Would you like my glass of water?
No.
Okay. Would you like some LPL scrims? Because some global news, even though the LPL cannot resume because of the coronavirus still, they have started this idea of streaming some of the scrims, which seems like the next best solution, right?
Yeah, it is really interesting, right? And I have no real insight into like all the planning they're doing or what kind of possible solutions they have. I feel like this would be one step away from doing just online games, right? Actual online league games, which is kind of what I was expecting them to maybe do if it had gone on this long. I think that could be interesting to just run the league as an online league. Yes, there would be complications. Like you'd have to have refs in both team houses or something, and maybe they can't even travel that much. Like I don't really know how restricted it is. I think it's cool, right? People are going to be craving content. LPL is by far and away the most popular esports league in the world of any game. It's not even close. So people are clearly going to be missing it, and I think it's cool to give some kind of insight into what some of the scrims look like. We've obviously gotten to watch scrims, and sometimes they're pretty funny. I think people could be pretty shocked at what some of the scrims look like, assuming they play them as
normal scrims. That's what I was about to say. I think it's you can't turn your brain off about the fact that this is getting broadcast. So I think you'll try hard a lot more.
It'll be more close to stage games.
Yeah, because
no five man TP level one into the opponent's jungle. And
when people get mad in scrims when something goes wrong, you can just see the switch turn off in their brain where they're like, all right, I'm fighting. I don't care. You know, we messed this gank up. I died in the dive. Real games, you start playing back. The other guy has more gold now. Scrim games, try dive them again.
And they also cut off their scrims, right? They'll just be like, all right, we forfeit.
And 10 minutes.
And, and leave the game, literally. So, if you, it's a difference between like, oh, you're streaming your solo queue or.
One of my funniest limit testing examples I saw was remember when Kale didn't get ranked till 11, right? So weak level one. And he's playing against an Ignite Olaf. Just walked up and auto attacked him until he died. It's like, wonder how close I could get. Oh, it turns out he's still full health. Guess this one's.
Do you really know until you actually try?
No, you don't know, you know?
I like it. A man of science. Yeah. You actually have to conduct the experiment.
You do it in a bot game or something. You know, like, you don't need to do that with 9 other people.
I would say I am a very seriously worried for MSI now, though. Although this is cool, all right, you know, they're going to show some scrims. At this point, having passed our halfway point, they play way more games, so they've missed a tremendous amount. I honestly, at this point, I see a very slim chance that we have LPL at MSI.
I would hope they do like some kind of compressed schedule or like
a mini tournament bracket.
Right. I was going to say something that would be kind of cool in that regard that like, okay, yes, I would have rather had the whole season, but we're going to do a massive double elim tournament in a month, you know, to make it up. And then the winner goes because we can't do anything else.
I think that would be cool. You know, I think it's obviously complicated by the fact that there's a like travel bans and these things on certain countries to certain countries. Right. You know, so I think that makes it really, really tough. In that if a country is travel banned to going other places because of coronavirus, even if you can go in, you wouldn't want to bring people in because of the safety issues, right? Like you'd be worried that, you know, going to China for the event, and if the Chinese players cannot leave China, then how do you get into the same place and actually like compete, right? That I think is one of the biggest difficulties. And then you have to look at like online solutions. But at that case, it's like, is it even better to have them there if it's going to be like they have to play on high ping and other people aren't, right? Like it would be really weird. So it does feel like at this point, MSI has got to be affected, right? Like, I don't know what the fallout will be, but I'm kind of in your boat, Kobe. I'm finding it hard to see a world in which MSI is just like a normal MSI. You know, even if the LPL team gets there, it's going to be a question of, did you send the best LPL team because you didn't have the full season?
Yeah. And I...
There's an asterisk on it no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Even starting to get a little bit worried for Korea.
Yeah.
Now that it's spreading into Korea, like that's one of the problems, right? It doesn't look like it's slowing down. So we shall see what the future holds there. We can't really project too much because you got to take it day by day and see how the real world events actually unfold.
And also, we don't know really anything about coronavirus.
I really haven't done any research into it.
Yeah, we're not
the
experts. I think
that
here.
It's bad.
I too think it's bad.
I did research right when it broke out.
Yeah.
And then I didn't update my knowledge since then. And I'm sure we've learned a lot more.
Yeah, I would think so. So is pretty scary. I hope that, you know, all the leagues are going to be able to get going again and that everyone affected by it is going to be okay. But we got reports and honors. I can start us off for this one. I got my report and honors ready. Hopefully you guys have yours all written down so you remember it. So I'm going to start off with my report. I want to report teams that are drafting early picks that are only strong in isolation and forgetting about how it works in the rest of the team comp, right? So the easy example is drafting Elise and then no lanes for Elise to gank, right? We saw this, I think, TL against, I believe it was EG, right? They draft Elise into Sejuani. It's like, great, you have early game prio. Now go smash him. And you have like an Ornn top that you're playing against. You know, you're not going to be able to really like drive this with this set Elise. They didn't really have the ability to pressure mid lane. Bot lane was like fairly defensive. You know, they were playing Ashe and stuff. Like they didn't really have anywhere, it felt like, for the Elise to go and dominate. And this is not just the TL thing. This has been something that I think... you know, from talking to pros and talking to some coaches and stuff, it feels like people are just kind of almost getting the wrong read on the meta because of scrims and picks like Set, where if you're brawling the entire game in a scrim, you're just smashing everyone. You're feeling it's so strong. It's like, okay, great. You're supposed to beat Ornn on Set, but what does that actually look like? If you can't get anything from that besides 10, 15 CS, Ornn is just so much more valuable to have later on in the game. And you can't actually pressure Ornn under the turret because he has really good wave clear. Like these types of things have been kind of frustrating me. And it feels like there's all these little picks in isolation that are like, this is great for the lane matchup, but then you can't do anything outside the lane matchup. So who cares that you're up 10 or 20 CS?
Yeah. Dignitas did that as well when they had GP Orianna and they first picked an Elise and then took those as their solo lanes.
Yeah.
Like, what's the Elise supposed to do exactly? And sometimes
I got both the scuttles.
I think sometimes if the enemy team has early game and you take an early game jungler to help control and match it because you know then you will outscale, I think it can be fine. But if you pick the Elise, the enemy team has a good amount of scaling, you have a good amount of scaling, and then you just have a random early game jungler that has no game plan, it feels kind of whack. I still think there are... I mean, not to go too far in the other direction where some people are like, never pick Elise. I'm like, well, at least Qiyana has dominated and Elise Pantheon has dominated. And like those are gank lanes that you want the Elise to play to.
Exactly. And that's my point is not to never pick early strong champions. My point is that you must think about what you can get with that priority. It's like you get top lane priority when you pick Set. Okay, sweet. What are you going to do with that besides get a little bit of farm, right? If you then have something where you can run around and take objectives because your bot lane is strong too and you can, you know, win off Dragon Soul, sweet, right? If you have Elise and you're pairing with Renekton, you can chain dive them and, you know, get all the Rift Heralds, sweet, right? These make sense. But sometimes I think people aren't looking that far.
Yeah, I think anytime that someone uses absolutes like always or never, good chance, Mark, that you can say they are over exaggerating or there's going to be a hole in their logic. I also reported Team Liquid specifically for that game.
Yeah, okay.
But it was yet one part for the draft, but two follow-up things. Once you have that draft, they can still win that game. Even if you have Elise, you can actually gank the Zoe in the mid lane. Yeah, Ornn is going to be fairly difficult with Set, but you can actually pull off kills on Set. Set is not this invincible guy. You know,
well,
people
Set was with the Elise.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The Ornn. Ornn is also not an invincible guy. You can also Switch champions and your placeholders and your explanations interchangeably.
Yeah.
It helps out a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're making your case. So, like, you can still do things with the Elise. It's not the optimal pick there. I think it was a bad pick. That's why I'm reporting Team Liquid for their draft for this game. But I have a side report of some of the players in the game too, like Doublelift not building a Last Whisper when he's facing the Ornn, Sejuani, Braum in the late game.
With multiple mountain dragons.
He had an extra item slot. They had multiple things multiplying all of their armor and resistances to the 300 point. Like, the Last Whisper, in a world where everyone is so concerned with itemization right now, and there's just flame going everywhere, Last Whisper is incredibly efficient. It's a very cheap item, and in that game, his last item, he gets PD. A Phantom Dancer for maybe you can say he said bigger, more crits. He was focused on getting crits. It does give you a little bit of move speed and, you know, your shield. You can always have, there's always arguments,
but there was a Reddit comment in the post game thread where it's like, what does like the extra zeal do there over Last Whisper? And so it was like, makes those little big red numbers tick up more often. Yeah. And it's like, wait, that was actually the logic.
Yeah, yeah.
I like seeing the little, the squiggle. What is that?
Yeah. And he knew, he admitted it was
what
wrong.
Is that shape? Yeah. He wasn't defending it.
No.
Yeah. Oversight. But what is that shape called? You know, like the when you get a crit or the true damage proc, it has that triangle-y thing. You know what I'm talking about?
And the little
I
red
can't
mark.
Picture it.
Yeah.
That is, so I play jungle. I don't go crit a lot.
I know what you're talking about. It's not in your it's in your character sheet, right? Like beside your character portrait, it shows all your stats and it's like the mark for crit.
It's something.
But when you actually get a crit, it pops up with this little extra thing.
I have no idea what it is. A lot of the icons are really hard to tell what they are unless you really look close.
What's your
report? Stun thing is like this little circle.
Yeah.
My report. Hold on, let me look it up.
Here, I can just do my honor.
No, it's Travis Gafford. I'm reporting Travis Gafford on behalf of my friend Kobe.
Get him!
Cat for Kobe. Hashtag.
Cat for Kobe.
Cat for Kobe.
You had to look that up. That I should forgot. Be in the forefront of your mind at all times.
I got riled up on Team Liquid and itemization.
Yeah, Mark and I each have two cats. Why can't Kobe have one cat?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Travis publicly tweeted he's got a girlfriend now. Kobe's all alone. No one's coming by the apartment. He's just
actually, I'm less alone now because him and his girlfriend are here.
All right,
now.
But you're more alone because you're isolated.
Yeah,
you don't
when
want a third
Travis
wheel.
Travis is cutting love with his girlfriend. You could be cutting love with your cat.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You don't want to be third wheeling. You got to get Kobe a cat.
Exactly.
And Travis made a bunch of promises about, oh, if this gets 1,000 likes, we'll get a cat. Got 1,000 likes. He keeps moving the goalposts.
It got like 5,000 likes, so I should get 5 cats, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
5,000 cats.
Appreciate the support,
a lot
Mark.
Of cats.
My honor is...
if you have the same honor as me, I'm going to be sad.
Well,
yeah, just copy
you did my report first.
Yeah.
So let's see if I could go first. I'm honoring Vulcan.
Okay.
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 Cool.
Because he... Cloud9 put him in the carry position. For me, it actually brought up a cool thought experiment where I was like, oh, so if Zven, the carry player, is actually playing Senna as a support, to me, the defining part of a support is the one in that lane that does not get the CS.
Yeah.
All right, so if people are now doing this, it makes a lot of sense. My marksman player is on the marksman support, even though they're technically not getting the CS, they're the support. Vulcan is now the carry, okay? That's carry Tom Kent, my friend. It's a tank carry bottom lane. I'm fine with you arguing it.
Okay,
but that's my stance. And he still performed all his supportly duties, saving Zven with timely devours. And then you get way more tanky. So this Senna thing, where Senna is an extremely strong support that does a lot of damage, I really do like that it opens up more avenues in solo queue in high-rated games. I've been seeing so many more Senna plus mage combinations even, and those are more exciting to me than the Senna plus a tank combination, which is probably better for pro play, though. But you can get in there on like a Senna Syndra lane and absolutely dump out the damage.
So when Vulcan plays Syndra and farms it up, then I'll be like, nice,
so that's
played carry.
Carry player.
So here's the thing. Here's the argument where I won't buy it that Tom Kench was the carry, is that if you hit the scoreboard and didn't know how much farm he had, you would not be able to tell what the dude
had a dead man.
Yeah, he just got a dead man's earlier.
It's more tanky and more fast. So I'll accept that you don't want Vulcan to get credit for being the carry.
Yeah.
But would you still term Sven the support? Just a very successful support?
No.
No. I think you got me closer on that one because he at least has a warding item and is performing supportish duties. But Vulcan is not performing carry duties. He's not dumping damage out in team fights. He's not supposed to be, you know, assassinating. He's not doing anything that when you say you're a carry player, other than you got a little bit more farm than a support typically gets.
And also, Sven never once that I was really seeing was going on like roaming for deep wards. You know what I mean?
He roamed top and got a kill for Liquid.
He did once, but that was like the lane swap. You just see that bot laner could do that. Like, he played it like a bot laner. Yes, he did have the warding item, but I thought it was a really cool strategy. I really liked that game. Because especially, you know, I had talked about in that I was casting that game in Champ Select when they locked in Senna, you know, I've played some Senna bot now, and you really don't get hardly any souls at all when you're farming now. It like you only get it from scrapping constantly, and pro play generally doesn't have that. So putting him as the support, having him pick up all the souls from missing CS and from being able to actually have all his time to constantly harass and generate souls in lane, I think was so smart. And I think it was a really cool strategy.
Yeah, I want to throw a little addendum onto our post-game segment we did on that, because we were talking about how you can theoretically get 20 CS per 5 minutes with the support item before incurring the penalty that reduces the gold that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And Sven was at like 8 at 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, he could have farmed more. And then I talked to Licorice afterwards, and he was like, oh, yeah, we know. And he just likes the souls more. He thinks they're better. So just want to say, for if you are going to play this and you saw that segment, Sven, the professional player, says the souls are better.
Range feels nice.
Range feels really nice.
A little side story. Jat was obsessed with Senna a month before she got these changes. And,
oh, is this the jungle thing?
Yes. I played a game with him. And he was the one who came up with this. It wasn't even me telling him, okay, come hard leash me through my whole jungle.
Yeah.
But that was his plan, because you can get your guaranteed soul out of the jungle monsters. And this was before they changed the soul drop rate. It only took one game for us to test and figure out that it is very poor sacrifice to go to lane that late and be level one.
He's level one, they're level three, and it's.
But I've got 8 souls.
And the person playing support on our team was just like, WTF, mate, what's going on? And I was pretty happy because I was playing Olaf power farm. And then I was like, well, I can really power farm through this jungle as Olaf pretty close to a similar speed, actually. I don't need Senna. Maybe with a different jungle champion would have been better. But I'm just saying, Jat was focusing on soul generation back in the day.
And he commented
wacky stuff.
He mentioned that there were a couple times Sven hovered around his jungler to get some extra souls in that game.
Yeah. So he did it at Raptors. He followed him at Red. He did it a couple times when he was like right there.
I always tell in Solo Queue when my bottom lane Senna, you know, leashes for me and then walks away before the blue buff dies, I'm like, That's one right there. I mean, one's pretty good. You didn't even have to delay.
There's like the jungler's holding blue buff for mid, and then the support, and then Senna's like, wait for me too. He's running from base. It's already so annoying as a jungler when you're holding mid, like blue for mid, and they're clearing a wave.
Yeah.
It gives me slightly less confidence in my solo queue Senna's ability, if that happens, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're not into optimizing souls. I don't know how I feel about this person.
You just want them to be there till it's dead. All right. My honor is going to go to Blabber, his kick on Stixxay. I want to say there maybe was something cooler mechanically from LCS, but I can't remember it. This is in my head as the coolest mechanical play, like the flashiest play I've seen in LCS ever.
And then instantly Licorice F's it up.
Licorice absolutely trolled this weekend. He could have been a report. But that kick was so sick. If you guys haven't seen it, go watch the end of the C9 versus CLG
game. It gets the mace. It's so good. It gets C9 aced.
It does get the mace. I don't even care what happened afterwards. It just looks so cool. It was such a clean one. Like, I believe it was Smoothie. He queues the Smoothie. Smoothie's actually quite far from his AD. And then he ward hop kick flashes, and he does it all instantly and just like ping pongs around the screen, kicks in the AD. And then, Licorice playing set and just dunks him back to where he was and they get aced. Yeah. But that was so good. And I spent some time thinking about it. And I'm not saying there hasn't been a better play or like a cooler looking play. Mm-hmm. But I was like, damn, I really feel like that was the coolest mechanical play I can remember from LCS.
It's a good week for Lee Sin's. Brock's had some good ones too.
He had some really good ones, especially his second kick over by the red pit was pretty dope. But yeah. I was watching that with Kobe, and we're like, I feel like I would have been more excited had I not just seen the blabber one. Because now it's like you just saw this, right? It's like, oh, well, he
the
did
a 360 dunk. The girlfriend
gift
where you're looking
at
your shoulder, like the blabber kick.
Blabber just did a 360 windmill, so 360 dunk's all right, you know?
Say we're living in an alternate universe where C9, they end the game after that play. That play gets played all over, you know, the YouTube clip of that play is just over and over rolling.
We
like,
should report
that
Licorice.
One goes into the Hall of Fame, right?
Licorice ruined his cool play.
Yeah, that would have been one of the great plays.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's versus the 10th place CLG. The first time
they got A's the whole split. And to be fair, there was probably other things that went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, Pobo had a shuffle follow-up in there, too.
It was really funny, though. Funnier to just play him Licorice.
Yeah.
As far as other really cool mechanical plays, some things I kind of vaguely remember. There have been some really good Syndra multi-directional double stuns.
Mm-hmm.
From various people over the years, where like
Ari.
Yeah, they're doing multi-directional ones. Let's see, what else? So, there's been some decent Azir ones. People always mention the Phoenix one. I wasn't as hyped for the Phoenix
one. The 4v1 thing, you mean? Yeah.
I think the flash follows are really nice on Gragas and stuff, but like it's rare that you really see the like solo queue montage type thing, you know what I mean? Someone actually just like having confidence to go for it. And pulling it off, right? Mm-hmm. That it's why you often just see, like, you'll just see them queue to them and they kick flash, right? Those kinds of things, like, look nice, but it's actually much easier to do than this, like, multi-directional one. Because you have to do that so fast, and there's such a high chance of it failing and you looking like an idiot.
Or your teammate just putting it back where you found it. He's like, Blabber, I believe you dropped this. Puts the AD carry back safely under the Nexus turrets. Thanks, Licorice.
Did you honor yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
My honor is Pobelter, actually.
Okay.
They went 0-2. I wouldn't say he looked incredible or anything like that, but I'm just glad that he's back in the LCS because I definitely felt when he did his interview with Gabby on Monday Night League after their 0-2, it was just good hearing him talk again because he's actually a pretty funny guy, really sarcastic, dry sense of humor kind of thing. And so like he's talking about how he thought he'd have this anime return where they like take that, down like C9 after being the like the horrible 10th place team. They're going to ruin their 10-0 or whatever. And then they got slammed. And he's like, oh, shoot. just hearing him talk about that, I was like, oh, God, yeah, I'm so glad Pobelter's back in the league.
And he had two really good laning phases. So it didn't necessarily
result good,
in like them winning. But his laning was good. He was winning his lanes. He was up in farm. He was doing some stuff.
I think most people that are involved in competition, you know, have dreams like that too. Or I remember like in middle school on the basketball team, sometimes I have random dream where I'm like, I get subbed in and for some reason I can dunk now.
And the shot clock's winding down. I hit a three. And yeah. It was just funny to hear. And I'm glad he's back. Hope CLG does a little bit better.
Yeah, I like it. They are struggling, man.
That's all of them, right? Yeah. We did all our reports on it.
Good job. Yep. Good job, us. We're halfway through the split now. And we wanted to give some awards, right? You know, these may not be as researched or prestigious as the end of season awards, but they're pretty damn good. They got some shine to them.
I'm glad you undersold
they're
our research,
nice.
Too.
Our research.
Of this morning, 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, maybe a couple minutes last night. So, All Pro, here's my thought. Cloud9 is by far the best team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, Cloud9. Your first team, all five players.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the second team.
Would there be anyone you put over someone?
No. Mark, let's just get into this one.
I was just making sure.
No, because I think it's obvious. They're so by far the best, right? So we want to start with the second team. I can give you my rundown on my five players.
Let's do positions instead of you doing all five.
Okay. You want to go
top
position by position? Yeah. Okay.
I think it's better.
All right. Yeah. Top lane, I got Broken Blade.
Broken Blade.
Broken Blade.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think TSM on
maybe
the top
it's not
side.
That's kind of cool.
We'll see when we get to jungle.
Yeah, TSM on the top side, I think, has been playing really well. Broken Blade has been a big part of it. He has been very flexible. I do think it feels more like his spring split from last year, where he was kind of performing better. And I do think that a lot of that credit also is deserved by Dardoch. But it's been fun to see TSM kind of playing this top centric style, and actually I think they've improved a lot, and I think that they are looking pretty damn good with it. And it's interesting because really it feels like they're kind of one of the only teams in the league that are playing more of that top lane focused kind of carry style, which has been fun to watch.
Yeah, I think Broken Blade really deserves this. Top lane didn't take me too long to choose at all.
Yeah.
And I was even one where at the end of last year I was very dubious if they should even keep Broken Blade, because with the jungler switch out, there were a lot of plays where he's overreaching, they tower dive. It looks very bad because you get these isolated deaths, you get these over dives and stuff like that. And there was nothing really left of that spark from spring finals with the Vladimir, where everybody was getting super hyped for him, right? But this year, he came back. Amazing versatility from this player. He switches the set with Dardoch. He switches the Qiyana into the top lane. He solo kills people on Ornn over and over. I just feel like he really deserves this, especially because it's a player that I previously doubted.
I think he's a little bit like Huni without the pedigree of like all the domination in different leagues and things like that, but a similar style where he wants to play really aggressive and find his own leads. And if you don't play around him or he's not given that opportunity, he's still going to go for it, and he's just going to die sometimes doing it. And so Dardoch's willing to play around it. Like you said, the drafts are pretty good about setting him up for success. And so they are giving him the opportunity to do this, and he's following through. And basically TSM's primary carry right now, maybe more so than Bjergsen. I think maybe Bjergsen's a little bit more flexible, so you can just kind of have it be a little easier with his blind picks and play around him a little bit less in the draft. But it does feel like, yeah, probably Broken Blade is their primary player right now in game.
I would say so. I mean, I think that it feels like Kabe is kind of the Cody Sun style role for 100 Thieves when they were doing well, where it's like, all right, you're going to farm and you're going to be there for late game and you're going to do well in that late game. But like, that's not where we're focusing.
Yep.
So he's done really well.
Go ahead. Do you want to do jungle?
Mm-hmm. This was a hard one. I had Smithy.
Jungle is a hard one. What's your reasoning on Smithy? I have a different one. Maybe we get three.
Ooh, here we go. I think every jungler has had things where they look great or terrible. So I think Smithy has been dominated two or three times in different games. I don't understand why Immortals has a positive win rate. And the only thing you can point to is like they've won a lot of really late games and they have a lot of weird decisions and shot calls to win them those games. And he has also had a couple games where he did carry them. Like
the Rek'Sai Cho'Gath.
Yeah, exactly. So I think some of these are enough for me to be like, yeah, there you go. This is a team that doesn't really have, like, we're talking about playing around lanes. I don't think you have that many lanes to play around for Smithy. So when he has these rough early games, part of me is like, well, could you have taken Lee Sin LeBlanc like we've seen other people do and try and win 2v2 with Ikka mid?
Probably not.
Probably not. So I don't even think he has the same options available to him at any point in the game that some of the other teams with positive win rates have, like Santorin and PoE. You can play around that, and Dardoch and Bjergsen, you can play around that. I just don't think that he even has that option, and he's still having a positive influence.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of debate that can be had on jungle, much different from the top lane where we all instantly answered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was debating having Xmithy up there. I think jungle is really hard.
Two of them that I was also considering, so I went with Chaser. Closer.
I was like, please?
What year is that?
Yeah. Prediction for the future, he will come over.
Don't leak the script.
Closer because, it was between Closer and Dardoch was a really close one for me. Because like you're mentioning, all the junglers have had some big mistakes, right? There have been some big bloopers from Dardoch, but he has also had a lot of big carry performances for them in their team fights and made their team fights look so much better. Plus, a super dominating early game. He has extremely good stats for the early stages, but I give it to Chaser instead because...
Closer.
Why is Chase
what
so?
What are you doing?
Why is it so deep in my head?
I don't know.
I can't help you, but I
couldn't tell you. report.
I'm a worldly, reporting Chaser for confusing colors.
This Chaser guy is just so damn
I'm
good.
A worldly league fan, okay? So, and I woke up very early this morning due to construction. So
here we go.
It's all jumbled around in here. Closer, because on Golden Guardians that have to had to work through so many issues, I felt like he has been such a big catalyst for them in creating their wins and allowing a lot of this team to grow and work together. And especially when you talk to any of the players on his team, they just have these gushing, glowing reviews for him. And for me, that goes a long way. When you have teammates that will, unprompted, just start off in these monologues about how great of a teammate you are, how much you do.
Let me tell you about Closer.
Exactly. Or Chaser, if you will.
Maybe they're all just talking about the wrong player. I love my teammate, Chaser.
Yeah, maybe they weren't actually talking about Closer. They were talking about Chaser, you know? They just feel like,
this Chaser guy
is so good, Kobe. And you're like, you mean Closer? Like, no, Kobe, not our jungler. All right, well, I went with Thardok. So we actually did have three different. I did debate between, you know, those two guys. The other kind of honorable mention I would give is Santorin. I think he's actually had some pretty solid games. And you know, FlyQuest is actually in sole possession of second place, right? They have seven wins. They're actually doing really well. But the big reason that I gave it to Thardok is because when I was looking at Broken Blade and his success, I really had to look at what changed around him. And when I think back to last year, and especially in summer, you know, playing with Greg and also with Acadian, to be fair, they tried playing around topside, and it always looked so uncoordinated when TSM was going to that top side. I remember so many bumbled dives, so many times where one guy's going in, the other guy's going out, and they were trying to force it, and it never really clicked. So I feel like Thardok is pretty deserving of a lot of that credit for how well this playstyle is working, because he has great synergy with Broken Blade. That is kind of the defining playstyle for the team. So I think that's been pretty exciting to watch, and it's also really cool just seeing Thardok, I think, come out. Haven't heard even a whisper of like drama or anything. He's working hard and he's playing well. And, you know, give me a year or two of this and everyone forgets about the kind of like toxic Thardok days from the past. You know, that slate can be wiped clean. So I am very impressed by him.
All right. Do you want to keep ping-ponging back and forth this way?
We liking this?
Sure. I got PoE.
I want Kobe to go first one time.
Oh, I will go first.
Well, I already said it, so I got PoE
this
first.
This is when we're all going to be on the same, though, right? This is one.
Are
of
we?
The, I'm PoE.
I'm PoE.
Okay. Yeah. PoE and Broken Blade were probably the two easiest for me. I felt like PoE, you know, even potentially could be considered up for first team. I thought he was really, really good. Again, FlyQuest sitting 7-3. This was not a team that I had that sort of expectation out of. He has been a consistent, you know, late game threat, which is what you always kind of think you're going to get. But he has been taking over more games than it feels like he does in the past and really kind of exerting his influence on the map, you know, really getting good advantages. So you're kind of getting that consistency, but it feels like getting a little bit more of that kind of X factor, that carry threat from PoE than I'm used to seeing. And I've been really, really impressed at the level he has been bringing. And rightfully so, he won Player of the Week this week.
Yeah, I think that he also, something that doesn't show up in stats, but you can see if you look at the games really closely, is works really well with his teammates and knows what he wants. So the communication is definitely there. You can see it in the movements with the jungler, with the support, and as well, some of the champion picks. I've cited it over and over how big of like a paradigm shift it is for PoE to have these smashing games on Rumble early, taking over for a champion that people don't associate with him. And you could tell even in the drafts for LCS, no other team got it before Rumble got nerfed. And they got it twice because they're like, that is PoE though. He's probably like a Xerath, Syndra, long range.
I don't care if Viper gets it. Yeah.
But I just think that has really benefited them, and I think that he's a very good all-around player.
Yep. You guys said it all.
He leads the league in trees per minute. TSD.
Oh, wow. So we're on AD carry, which I felt like was one of the hardest roles. Also, is the role that I picked last and had a special exception. A
preamble that you have to give.
Yes. Yeah. So I will go first,
as
Mark.
An excuse.
I will go first, but I am ready for you both to disagree with it and flame me. And that's completely fine.
Okay.
Because
if you say Vulcan, I'm gonna slap you.
That would be good follow up. That would be a good call.
I was like, wait a second. You can't get away with this.
Now you made me want to change. No. We were looking at AD carry for a lot, right? And if you take out Sven, it becomes super diluted. I think even more so than the jungle, because specifically, I think of the Team Liquid situation, right? Normally, you would just gut check, boom, double if right back out there. And because of all the Senna games, and not just because of the champion, the choices that he made on it, right? People are like, oh, yeah, she doesn't have that good wave clear. And there's some situations where he overly tunnels on some of these things. He gets caught out. He gets hit by these skill shots. You get hit by a skill shot on this champion compared to Aphelios. Aphelios has no more dodging, no more speed, actually less so even in evading skill shots than Senna. So, like, there are critical errors from all of the AD carry players below Sven. And since we're ruling out Cloud9, this really put in a big shift. Looking at all the other options, though, I couldn't bring myself to do it. And I started to think of this All-Pro team as my team that I'm coaching to try and go
win, you gave it to
an international spot. And so I slapped Double If on this team.
No!
To pair him with my support. Which
so
is,
that's
which
not
is
what an
probably
pro
clear.
Is.
And I'm very willing to accept your flame and disagreement, but I put him on there.
All right. To me, and we'll see if we're on the same page, an All-Pro is not a theoretical power ranking.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about how good Double
through
it
the
is.
First half of the split.
It's what you've actually done on game day in those games. Mm-hmm. How is he the second best through 9-10 games?
He's not.
I'm putting him there now because I want him
you
on
said
my team.
My theoretical team. That's not what an All-Pro is. We're not building the second best North American team.
If we're doing the theoretical best, I still think Double is the best AD. You know, like history-wise in NA, he's dominated for so long, but he's not there this split. He hasn't had those games, and I think he knows it. The Senna games weren't great. Yes, there are issues with team comp and other things.
You want a slacker on your international team? Double has played like no solo queue. I think Brox had played more one morning before LCS one time than Double had played in a week once.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
you want the slacker?
I was heavily looking at Bang, even at FBI. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
All right. Well, I'm going to go Bang. I think that while, you know, there are some criticisms thrown his way as far as, like, especially, you know, coming off, I think he just had a 0-0-0 game and people like, well, you know, you should maybe be in there and mixing it up and take some riskier moves, these types of things. I still think individually, while Bang hasn't always worked incredibly well with his team and EG hasn't always looked on the same page, he has been very, very consistent. He has not really been getting caught out. He hasn't been dying. He has been putting out really good damage numbers. And I think, you know, when you look at kind of the kind of key areas that you want a marksman player to perform in, it's consistent damage output and being safe, basically, right? You know, those are kind of the two things. And he's been really doing that. His lane has been going fairly well. So I don't really have any major marks against him other than maybe, hey, like, maybe you can do more with your lead, or maybe you should be playing more aggressive when you're losing or something like that. But for ADs, it's pretty tough. I was also kind of thinking about guys like FBI, who I think has actually had a pretty standout season, you know, and it is tough, right? Because you are kind of like heavily influenced by how good you know Double Lift is, right? But I don't think he's shown it. And I think that Bang, to his credit, has been really good this split.
One thing I didn't like was that little video interview where it seemed like he had a really poor attitude towards his
teammate. I mean, it wasn't just that. It was also the Zazel one that came out later where he was like, yeah, Jizuke is kind of crazy. He's doing his own thing. Me and Sven are in the
middle.
I think
that's what he's talking about.
No, there was the Bang one himself where he said, I can't control five people. Yeah, and then there was the Zazel
Both
one.
Both those were
yeah. So, I mean, he does seem like, you know, reading between the lines a little bit here, but you don't hear the other 4-6 teams talking like this about their teammates. And so I think it's pretty clear that he's a bit of an issue behind the scenes right now.
Yeah.
Which is why I thought no one else was going to put him on their second team. So I did. Because I thought, but now I want to change it just to be different. Because I do think, like Kobe was saying, this 80 carry. Well, so I the 80 carry one's really close, like Kobe was saying. So I thought we were going to get this diverse thing. He troll votes double it, and then we're the same. And I think, like you're saying, with FBI deserving it a little bit, I think Kabe is in there for contention as well. Turtle has been really good, actually. Normally, when we think of Turtle, it's like boomer bust play style. He's either killing himself or he's killing the opponent. And like, it's actually not been his play style at all this season. It's a lot less volatile because Ignar's doing a lot of roaming.
So
and,
if it's not Bang, who is it?
Well, I'm changing it.
Yeah, too.
Turtle,
yeah. yeah, why not? Turtle, yeah.
Are you some Jedi on it?
Really confident.
Yeah, Turtle. I love Turtle. He's my favorite player.
It's
hard because like it's also a play style thing, I think, a lot more with the AD carry position right now than you usually see. Because sometimes it's like the meta's Varus, Ashe, and Jhin. It's the utility AD carry meta. Everyone's playing the same meta. I think with some of the Senna stuff, MF, Aphelios is clearly broken, and then like what you go to after that has been up in the air, as well as what your playstyle is. It's been different. So Turtle's CSD is not good, but I can clearly be like, that's because Ignar's roaming and lead and is like one of the best supports. But it's kind of hard to be like, well, look at his CSD, it's terrible. So I that's why for me it's kind of hard to pick anyone. And Bang, at least in game without the insider knowledge type stuff, statistically is the second best, which is why I put him initially too. But I do think a lot of other AD carry players are having a pretty good season.
All right, who's your support then? If we're bouncing back and forth, well, it's your turn, right? Or is it my turn?
Kind of indicated Ignar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, are we synonymous on this one too?
So I can easily.
Anonymous?
I have Ignar.
I'll switch mine to be Core JJ because I think that it is very.
Lugging away around that dead weight of your second all pro.
Oh, because of the existing synergy between both of Corjus.
So wait, if they're the second best in AD carry and support, why are they tied at six with 4-6 record?
It's, it's the same thing that any solo queue AD carry bot duo will tell you.
team too heavy. Their mid laner's not good. Their
jungle
top
and mid difference here.
I've never seen the second all pro bot lane struggling so hard.
There's a better argument for Core JJ than there is for double.
Yeah. I'm trolling.
Give me that.
I don't think Core JJ is trolling to pick.
So I was really because I've been tracking Ignar, especially the roaming stats every week. And he is such a big part with the initiation for this team, you know, creating a lot of what they want to go for. When I'm looking at Power of Evil, I'm like, oh, he really knows what he wants. And he directs the teams there. Ignar is the guy that makes it happen. PoE gets a rapid fire crit on one person. Ignar immediately is like, bing, target acquired. Boom, he's in there. They win the team fight, right? Yeah. So I really think that he has been amazing. And since you guys are both going him, I'll throw it to Core JJ. But Ignar is on my phone as the support player.
I would say one of the big things that for me that really speaks to Ignar's strength is also his flexibility. Through the first 8 games of the split, he played 8 unique champions. I am always such a big fan of that. I think having a deep champion pool and, you know, not even just having a deep champion pool, but actually being really, really proficient on them and being able to give yourselves advantages in draft, advantages in the bot lane because of your flexibility is so key, right? Like you're seeing some other teams do things like where we're just like the first pick Tahm Kench and these types of things that are getting memed. Ignar, you don't have to do that. He's always going to have a pick for you. And I think that is really, really helpful to sometimes cover for other people's deficiencies in draft.
Okay. That does it for our all LCS team excluding Cloud9. And then time for some of the fun awards. I came up with one, the Social Butterfly Award, aka the Glow Up Award, aka Biggest Transition Award, aka Most Improved
Social
and
Butterfly.
And I'm giving it to that was a kind of a
You mean more like the like the lifetime of a butterfly where it's a caterpillar cocoon butterfly.
But also some social aspect.
Okay.
Because
social butterfly is someone who like floats around between everyone, usually. I thought that's what that meant.
I thought it was someone who goes through the stages of the butterfly, like in
you're kind of awkward
in middle school. In middle school, they're very close to themselves. They don't talk a lot. Oh, okay. I thought it was someone who becomes more socially outgoing.
Huh. It's the glow up, like you said. Yeah. We know what you mean now,
yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah, your time glow up. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So it's just one of those things floating like the
you
other.
Can just someone who floats too. Around?
Yeah, social butterfly, just kind of like, and they're over
you're
here.
You're really socially
and
active.
Over there, and lots of
yeah,
people.
Oh, I thought it's that you. Combined
you're like
with
cross-pollinating everything. You know?
It's not combined with the caterpillar stage.
A social butterfly is a slang term for a person who is socially dynamic, networking, charismatic, and personally gregarious.
Okay.
There you go.
So there's no caterpillar stage. I'm sad to learn that.
Okay, so who is your guy?
It's not a guy. It is a team. It is FlyQuest as a franchise because they went.
Oh, okay.
If you look at it for over the years, right? They came from the trashiest Snickers meme team where everybody hated the everybody hated the branding of this team, right? And they were just memed on constantly.
Trashiest Snickers meme team.
Would you contest it though?
No, just the word trashy.
And now,
yeah.
Look how far they've come. Not only
have
they absolutely gone from caterpillar stage to butterfly stage.
Yep.
Now
they're socializing. Social butterfly.
I'm taking back this butterfly meme.
Go for it.
They have absolutely exploded in their social game, but also I think in twofold, in their off-season changes, they had two of the best off-season changes very quietly, under the radar. Nobody was making big news stories about Ignar and PoE changing to FlyQuest. They're just like, oh, yeah, in the list of roster changes, FlyQuest is a little different now. They have absolutely completely changed the way that this team looks. Mm-hmm. And they've both worked really well together, too, which is hard when you bring in multiple new people. Yes, they have pre-existing synergy. People can be like, oh, yeah, on Misfits, they played together. But I still think this is such a big accomplishment for them to go from bottom of the standings, poor social, to top of the standings.
Trashy Snickers meme.
And
trashy getting drunk on the floor. You know, that's what I think when I hear trashy. It's just someone who's a mess. And now they're in a suit. They're put together, tied on up.
Yeah.
You guys have glow ups?
They sobered up.
You guys got other glow ups?
I just wanted to say one thing on them. Like, you know, as much as we are kind of joking about it, it's true. They had it like a non-existent brand, it felt like. And now it went to something that everyone knows. The TreeQuest stuff is not only cool and you latch onto it, but it's doing good for the environment. I think it's absolutely great. So plus one on that. My glow up is actually Dardock. I think Dardock too has cleaned himself up. You know, he's preppy now. He's working hard in school. He's getting good grades, and people are forgetting about the past Dardock. I think he's been doing really well. I think this is some of his best individual performances as far as consistency. I think you could argue that back in the day on TL, he had some like bigger carry games, but it always felt like Dardock would give with one hand and take away with the other, right? Like he'd either go 10-0 or 0-10 type of deal. Like it felt like the game was going to be about Dardock. And I feel like he has really been able to have some of these incredible games where he's taking over without having very many games where it's just like, oh, you actually cost your team that game. Because I can't really remember anywhere it felt like he was the sole reason that they kind of got blasted. So I've been really impressed with Dardock. Wanted to give him some credit. So Dardock is going to be my glow up.
On your all-pro team.
Yep.
And yep. Giving him this award.
There you go. You go, Dardock.
I'm not giving a glow up.
No,
because I didn't think about it beforehand, and we're already an hour into the show, and nope. I have my own to give.
Yeah, people don't. You don't have to give awards for every award.
Okay,
I want to hear a new strategy all right, on award.
So my award is the Life of the Party Award.
Okay,
and it's going to Niski for both in game and out of game reasons.
Okay,
in game he's everywhere. He's making plays mid lane 2v2. He's roaming top and bottom. He's popping off. He's going to be our all pro mid laner, like we said. So obviously, he's the cool jock guy, right? You know, he's just dominating the sports team. He's the high school quarterback because he's playing the most important position on the Rift, you know?
Everyone loves him. Snickers kid in his locker.
Yeah, and get in there, CLG. And then off the Rift, he's actually a really funny, nice guy. He likes trash talking, but he's not like, I don't think, mean-spirited about it or anything.
He did the coolest MasterCard Player of the Week pose.
Yeah, he's got a good pose. There's nothing not to like about him. He's got a
hard action.
He's great in game. He's hilarious out of game. He's pretty active on social media and memeing and stuff like that too. And I think that's what a lot of pros should be like. They should be more active and seem to enjoy actually being a pro, whereas some feel like it's so workmanlike and businesslike. He honestly seems to really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, I got a bit of a negative one since I don't want us to get too positive and happy. Oh, you got one?
Yeah, I got one of Mark's.
You got a life of the party.
Literal life of the party is Zach Smithy. Just go out and party with some pro players. There's a ranking. Froggen's in there as
That's
well.
The one you're bringing to the club?
My boy, Zach Smithy. Literal life of the party. I like that award, Mark.
That's funny. All right. Where did it all go wrong? Crown. What the hell happened? This guy was talked about, you know, at times during the last split as the best mid laner in the league. There was some pros who were actually still making the case for me coming into this year that no, he's actually better than Bjergsen. He's better than Jensen. He's better than any of these guys. Crown's incredible. CLG's going to dominate. A lot of us were definitely buying in that hype train, even if we didn't think he was the best mid laner in the league. I thought he was up there. I thought he was probably top four for sure. And he just completely fell off a cliff. And it's kind of sad. I'm happy to see Poeltl back in the league, but also kind of sad to see how Crown went out. And I always am kind of like just a little bit shocked when something like this happens from such a good performer to worst team in the league, worst player on the worst team. And where does he go from here? Like, what the hell happened?
I'll extend that to all of CLG.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
At one point was up there with TSM, one of the most popular sports team, or league teams, and just slowly over the years lost their fan base. They lost their way. Haven't been competitive.
It's been all downhill since Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long hill. I'm an old man. Yeah. That was a long time ago.
It was But yeah, I would throw the whole org in there as well. Just it's like, as all of us were kind of there from the beginning, it's like that was such a large brand that you just associated with like, sick, TSM, CLG, here we go. Mm-hmm. Until like season six even into season six, because that was the spring finals. Mm-hmm. You know, like... And then from season six till now, it's so just weird to see.
Yeah.
From literal WCG champions to this.
That was their crowning achievement.
There you go.
Not MSI finals.
Honestly, though, you mentioned Crown. You mentioned extending it to the organization. There's also a lot of coordination issues with the team. There could be a WTF for Smoothie. There could be a WTF for Wiggly. There could be a WTF all over the place here.
expel them from our school.
WTF, that's an award you can hand a lot of those out, actually. Some could go to Liquid, some could go to a lot of the drafting and a couple of the teams.
Definitely. There's been
You're going to have to print out a lot of those.
I got a positive one here, though. Most likely to succeed, as I don't even know what I was saying. Johnson. I think this guy, a lot of promise. Young rookie coming in. And some NA talent here out of solo queue. Has he been dominating? No. But I think that he has looked really strong overall. Like, he's been solid. Beat Doublelift. That was pretty cool. And this is someone that I am excited to see where he goes in a couple of years.
Fair.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think
there's not a lot of other rookies and super young players.
I cornered the market.
So it's hard to be like,
freshman.
I also nominate this new young and up and coming mid laner for CLG. Poebelter's going places, okay? He's coming into the last place team and gonna turn it around.
This new guy, Brox, is pretty cool. Best foreign exchange student.
That's true.
No, I'm not doing that one.
Oh, it's too late. You already did it.
No, I have another
record
one.
It's recorded. I don't want that one. Go for it.
All right. My other one is teacher's pet.
Okay.
And it goes to Bjergsen. If Reggie's the teacher, he's the kid who's just sucking up. So the teacher and him are just doing the same thing. You know, he's ratting out the other kid. I don't know if Bjergsen's actually doing this, but in my head, I've concocted this whole.
Reggie, did you see my Syndra play?
Reggie.
Look.
I think we need to do this. Okay. You know, he's the teacher's pet.
Yeah. I can see it.
I don't have a lot of like background on it or like diving.
I don't think there's anything actually true there, but the idea of it being just because he has part ownership of TSM that like he's the teacher's favorite.
Is he maybe the teacher now that he kind of owns it, you know?
He's like the what is it, the in college
the teacher assistant, TA?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Teacher assistant,
I also saw last time when we were talking about Faker being part of T1, Bjergsen owning part of TSM, Jack tweeted out, Sneaky has been part owner of Cloud9 for years now. So put some respect on his name as well.
He's the, original
teacher's pet.
The under the table deals that they then had to get fined for? Are those the ones we're talking about?
That's what he tweeted. He's been part owner of Cloud9 for a while.
Okay.
That's true. He was.
So we're six other
players. I'm out of awards.
Wait.
Best individual game performance.
Oh, I forgot to prep this one.
That's okay. Like we're saying, we all just came with our own.
Best hair.
which also could double as a 1v9 performance for me because I give it to Someday. Mm-hmm. Someday right now on 100 Thieves is putting in so much work. He had to go all the way down to Academy because they couldn't find, you know, roster spot for him with import rules last year. And since he has come back, they have won games straight off of him solo killing Impact over and over. That's the individual game that I want to nominate for.
Not best. The Lucian game?
Nope. I like the Impact one more because the Lucian game looks so much more controlled and the rest of the team was doing what they need as well.
And
like
Gold I'm Guardians saying, was turbo inting.
This and
Gold eight solo deaths.
Exactly. Deaths, I mean, yeah. But that's why this also doubles as a 1v9 award because he has multiple instances of this where Someday is hard carrying.
Yes. Okay. Someday has been really good. I don't really have one for that either. So
cool.
I'll say a Broken Blade Qiyana game because it was really cool. Even
that was
the team
really
played around him and it wasn't like I'm 1v9ing and hard carrying. I think there's got to be a better example from this split where like a team probably should have lost, but the player was just like, no. I'm trying to think.
Bjergsen had a big smash Syndra game on Ryoma.
Yeah, the double solo kill.
Yeah, but they were winning that whole
it's
game.
It's hard to go further back.
I really like the, I mean, this is just this recent weekend. I don't know if it was like an absolute hard carry, but Jizuke versus TL. I think that he was great on the Zoe. I felt like he almost solo got them every one of those dragons that actually kind of, you know, won the game.
He had a LeBlanc game earlier. That was really good.
Oh, yeah, his LeBlanc game at the start of
the
season.
Win of the season.
That was an absolute pop-off game. That actually might be one of the best carries of the season for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had some stinker LeBlanc games.
Yeah.
But he's had some really, really good ones too.
Yeah.
So something that I have been wanting to talk about, and it's kind of good timing because there is actually like a partnership coming up for week 7 with the LCS where we're highlighting Active Minds. This is, you know, a company like a website that is kind of just promoting basically like healthy gaming and you know, positive mindset and this type of thing. And, you know, it's kind of just interesting a little to talk a little bit about your guys' experiences and how you deal with frustration in gaming, how you deal with, you know, negativity and maybe like bad teammates and these types of things when you're playing.
So Active Mimes, yeah, they're the nation's premier nonprofit organization supporting mental health awareness and education for students.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the partnership. As far as your question for getting frustrated in gaming, for me, it's a multi-step process. I find that for me, the most useful thing is first to break the cycle of what I'm currently focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in an argument with someone, if Mark is inting in my game and flaming me and raging at me, which has never happened.
Because I'm an active mind.
right now, my go-to is going to the gym because I not only will I break the cycle of negative thoughts just focusing on the problem at hand that has popped up, but I find putting physical exertion into actually getting some of the adrenaline and fight or flight chemicals out of my body and out of my legs really helps. Plus, it has the twofold thing. If I have lost 10 solo queue games in a row and that's my whole day, I feel very sad because I have accomplished negative life total gains basically for that day, except I can point to, okay, at least in the middle there between losing all my games, I did something positive and like went to the gym, which is healthy, build up something for the future. And then the second part of it is after breaking the cycle, then I'll like to focus on what can I actually do to improve it instead of focusing on, oh, this is such a terrible issue. This is so wrong. This is bad. What can I actually do to problem solve right now?
I like the gym one. I don't work out, but the end of day gaming period of time that I usually am playing games at,
mm-hmm.
I find that it's just harder for me to work up the frustration if I've already done like a whole day of stuff, just because like I'm relaxing, I'm trying to chill out. And if something goes wrong, I'm more likely to be like, eh, because it's like 10 o'clock at night and I've come home from work.
So you have preventative measures.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big things in general, not just in keeping a good mind space, but just like avoiding doing the wrong thing is not seeing it and then stopping yourself, but avoiding that situation and trigger in the first place potentially. And so I feel like if I wake up, like you're saying, and I have the whole day ahead of me and I play 5 games and they go really bad, that will feel way worse than if somehow at, you know, 9 o'clock at night I play 5 games and it's just a totally different mind space for me. So I feel like that's part of it, is preventative. Also, if it is starting to go in that like 5 game slump, you get up and do something for a second.
What he's saying, Kobe, is just quit while you're ahead, but it's never going to work out. Just quit playing those.
No, I'm not saying, I'm saying like, sometimes I just get up and take a shower. Yeah. You know, I'm like, I need to clean myself off after that one. And then I come back and I play a little bit more, but like, sometimes I'm like, when I'm chain losing, I just like slam next game and then I don't eat, you know? And so like getting up and forcing myself to eat that meal that I've been putting off, or get another cup of water and just take a minute can help before just slamming play again.
Totally. I mean, for me these days, honestly, one of the things when I get frustrated or really tilted, I play with my dogs. I get off the computer and I just play with my dogs for a bit, and I find it like
cats work too.
Almost impossible to be angry when these like fluffy cute animals are jumping on me and licking my face and stuff. So that untilts me almost instantly, and I found
animal
that works.
Support, yeah,
works emotional really really well. It. Emotional support dogs.
Travis,
ladder.
Are you listening?
And I would say one of the things that, you know, I've been kind of frustrated with just as a general topic lately is I feel like the normalizing of like rage and
the ninja tweet
and anger and stuff. And I mean, ninja, like, it's not really about him at all, because that may have just been like poorly worded. You know, maybe if he's just talking about like having passion or feeling something for when you win or lose, then I agree with that. But you know, just in general, I do see more normalizing of that. And it's like, oh, sick, bro. Like, I punched my monitor last night because I lost some games.
Summit.
Like, I've never broken a mouse or a keyboard or punched a monitor or done anything like that ever. I don't think that you need to have those kind of like super, super crazy reactions to be caring and to be like trying your best and wanting to get better. And I think that because it's kind of being normalized, I think people sometimes don't realize that it actually is stunting their growth and stunting their improvement. Like, I think that you have to really, truly improve and improve quickly, you have to be able to rationally look at what you're doing wrong, what you're doing right, and be brutally honest with yourself about where you need to improve, right? And I think that when you are really raging, like being frustrated and using that as motivation, that's different. But if you're like actually like enraged and freaking out and these types of things, that is clouding your judgment. That is clouding your mind. When you're typing and telling people to kill themselves and stuff, you're not thinking about your own mistakes anymore, right? You're not thinking about those things that you're doing wrong. And for me, like over all the years that I was a pro, the only thing that like, and I got mad lots of times, the only thing that getting mad did for me was made me blame things on external factors, right? I wanted to blame it on my teammate. I wanted to blame it on, well, he just got lucky, like, or is the thing, the comp he was playing was bullshit. Like, it wasn't my fault, right? And only in the moments where I was able to actually like calm down and look at it and be like, okay, well, what could I have done differently, right? There's always something you can do better. And I think focusing on that will help you improve so much faster than anything else. Even if all your other 4 teammates absolutely ran it down, there's still things you could do better.
Yeah, I completely agree with the focusing on a problem that you can solve instead of just like looking at the negative rage and situation that is at hand.
Here's what I actually did a couple times back when I played a lot more and I was trying to climb into diamond and stuff for the first time, is if I was losing games, I would actually stop playing and watch a replay of myself. And that is some humbling shit. Like, you will see how, like, especially if you watch a lot of pro play, which I always did too, was like, in your head in the moment when you're playing, you kind of think you look good. And then like you watch your mouse clicks and stuff and you don't. You look as bad as you probably are. And like, it kind of forces you to come to terms with that. If you screen lock on yourself and just watch your game and just look at every single thing you do, and you know, your top laner got solo killed, suddenly it doesn't look as bad when you see your fail flash into like this combo that you like button mashing correctly. Like, that kind of stuff can I think, like you're saying about looking for improvements, even when you are getting worked up, you can actually go do that right away to calm you down.
You're it's so natural to, in the moment, to justify why you just did this bad thing and explain it away to yourself.
I flashed in because I thought he was going to follow up and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. Or, well, I missed this because there was something else that was distracting me. Or, like, I didn't see the Oriana ball, but, like, really, it came out so fast, I couldn't have seen that. Like, it probably wasn't, you know.
Stupid brush covering it.
Yeah, whatever, you know. But when you watch it and you go back and you realize, ooh, the Oriana ball was there for 10 seconds, and I stepped on it. You're like,
One thing that I hear a lot in solo queue as an example, that's just good for like focusing on yourself. Oftentimes people will be like, why weren't you here? Why wasn't my team here? You know, I had a perfect flank. I got this perfect engage and my AD carry is taking red buff. You should always play in the moment that's at hand. And you have to check and you have to be like, okay, ideally my AD carry would be here. I get this perfect engage. We win the whole team fight. But in reality, AD carry's back there. So I can't, you can't fall into that trap, right? Mm-hmm. The ideal situation, I think some people often also kind of reach for.
Yeah, it's no longer the perfect play if he's not there. And that sucks and that's frustrating and I get that. But if he's not, you shouldn't just...
Like, use that to justify your misplay.
You running it down.
Theoretically, right? In a world that we're not in, yeah. I was right.
Yeah, exactly. So... It is, you know, food for thought, right? And excited to see what comes of this partnership. I do think it's a great topic to be out there and kind of, I think, raise awareness about, and for people to be able to feel comfortable talking about this stuff and finding ways to cope is always a positive thing. But we got some Twitter questions to hit here. We got here, this one's a big glass of Haterade.
Says, maybe you need this.
Do you think having a patch for pro versus normal players would be a good idea? Players over Diamond would play on the pro patches. This way you could fine-tune champions for all players without some champions always being extremely broken or abused.
So I don't agree with this as a solution, but it does bring up a big point that it is incredibly hard to balance this game for so many different skill levels. Mm-hmm. There are so many players, over 50% of players are silver and below. And the game is literally just played differently by these players than people even like platinum and above, right? So it is a very difficult thing that they have to balance some champions more towards some specific area that they're being used more in. However, I think it would feel so bad if the pros that I'm watching are playing on a differently balanced game than I'm playing. And it's actually, there's no translation there. I think there's a huge disconnect if I'm not actually playing the same game as you. It's like if the NBA court can be.
Yes. I know. I'm actually glad you went there because what people don't realize is there's actually different distances on 3-point lines at different levels of play. High school is closer than college, which is closer than NBA. And they do actually, in some regards, balance for the fact that, like, a high school player, not all your point guards are going to be 6'2". Some of them are 5'8", and don't work out literally every minute they're awake of the day and can't shoot from 25 feet away with another guy in their face. You know, so, like, they like, it is balanced for that. I don't ultimately agree with the take either, but I do think the idea that it's not, oh, it's just pro play. The fact that it's pro play and Diamond makes it a little bit more palatable of an idea where it's like, okay, once now that you understand the game concepts, maybe, you know, once you reach Diamond, it's understandable that the Amumu is now like not this OP champion that he is in bronze and silver and stuff. He's now getting exploited by all these other champs, and Ryze, which is abused in Diamond and things, is, you know, a little bit buffed in the lower elos because he's traditionally a champ. That's that. The idea is okay to me, but I agree with Kobe that ultimately, for a lot of people who watch pro play, what entices them about it is you get to see this cool new thing and then go into game and try it.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that directly because you're playing a nerfed or buff version of it, it does feel bad.
I think in principle, it's a really cool idea. When you put it into action, it becomes very difficult. You know, a number of things right off the top of my head. The difference between top of Challenger and Diamond 4, 0 LP, That's massive, yeah. Right? It's not even close. These people can't play the same champions the same ways. And, you know, I would also say, what if you were on the precipice, right? Like, right, if you're playing a diamond player, can diamond players no longer play anyone in platinum? You can't matchmake with them, right? Because otherwise,
just different
two different strengths of champions and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when as you're learning the game and you're climbing, for the first time ever you hit diamond, now you have to relearn the balance and all the matchups and the strength, right? Like, that kills, I think, the continuation sometimes of the skills that you've been building this whole way. And I think we want it to feel like improving, right? You learned the game, Not like you got to this point, now everything's different and you need to relearn all these matchups, because if you felt at level 4, you always win this matchup with these items, well, maybe that's not true anymore, because maybe you have 100 less health on this champion in the pro patch, right? So I do think there's, when you put it into practice, there's a lot of issues, but I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, I think ultimately, even though I was using the basketball comparison, I think it just breaks down because the sheer number of variables, because in League, it's like, how many champions, how many items, how many things are changing every single game that you are balancing as a designer?
Yeah.
Versus, like, you know, if basketball is like, okay, yeah, the 3-point line is different, but also the hoop's a little different, the rim size is a little different, the backboard's a little different, the ball's a little different, the court's a little different. You know, like, yeah. And the rules are a little different. You're like, oh yeah, you can actually pick the ball up and take 3 steps because you can't dribble yet. You know, like, it starts to be like, okay.
The 3.1-to-1 would almost be more like, neutral objectives change, right? Like, the jungle does more damage because at a higher level, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be more something like that, that's independent of champions. But it's, yeah, a really cool discussion. We have another question here. This one is from Pugs Oss. Says, question for the dive regarding Azalea's comment, re-top lane, feeling best when teleport was stronger. What if each role had their own unique summoner spell that only they could take? Teleport for top, smite for jungle, heal for support, etc., etc. Could also help define each role.
So, again, back to your kind of practicality point of the previous one, I had a game recently, actually, where I traded in lobby. It gave me mid lane or something like that.
Yep.
And it's my own fault. I wasn't completely paying attention, but the guy switched with me at the last moment. He was like, oh, can I have mid lane? And I was like, sure. So I gave him mid lane. It put me to jungle, which was part of the reason I said sure, because I was like,
didn't have smite.
Perfect. And I didn't have smite. The game changes it. And now we have these extra lockout things where you cannot even buy Hunter's Machete or the Talisman if you don't have smite. So the game was actually just pure lost. I could not gain early levels from jungling, so I literally had to go annoy my top laner. I was just roaming around the whole time. Nobody wanted me. I had no home. The jungle, the jungle's too scary. I can't buy jungle items. I don't have smite. None of my laners want my presence. And it was horrible.
I have an account that I do for, like, one tricking sometimes. Yeah. And I was one tricking Graves. And I was kind of on autopilot in champ select. And it was when Graves was top and a jungle. And I played top the previous game, but I was jungle this game. I didn't swap my summoner, so I had teleport. And because I can't buy the jungle item now, I had to start jungle with a Doran's Blade. Yeah. And I got first blood because this guy was ganking top, and I teleported in. And I would 2v2 fought them. And I still fell massively behind in the jungle. Yeah, but for a moment, I was like, massive brain.
That's really funny. Yeah, I think you also run into complications of, like, okay, well, if the entire game is then balanced around only top laners having teleport, what if I just don't even, like, swap or, like, in lobby positions, if I just go into the game then as a top laner, but I pick Caitlyn and my bot laner just goes top with Ignite, right? You know, things like this. And you can just play a different lane than the one you're assigned. And that kind of breaks down too.
And I guarantee you pros would do that.
Yeah, exactly. Lane swaps and things like that would happen. I think, you know, if you want to make top lane have more access to teleport, there's a couple things that you could do. You can make teleport a shorter cooldown for melee champions. You could do a really janky fix where it's like, you know how when you teleported to, I believe it was outer turrets before, it was a reduced cooldown.
It was 4 minutes instead.
So yeah, you could do that to, like, just TPing back to top lane is a lower cooldown, or even teleport when used on the top side of the map is a lower cooldown. There are ways to do it. it just becomes kind of very janky and like hard to track for most players. So it's probably not the best way to do it. I know that there is top lane work getting done, and I think some of those even got tweeted out. Some they're doing some itemization stuff, and they're trying to figure out ways to make top lane feel more impactful. But it does become difficult when you kind of get in there. So I got one last question for us. What if side selection was, this is from Akahari. What if side selection was independent of pick order selection? Besides camera angle, there's also difference in terrain around pits, side lanes, as well as proximity of red buff to jungle to bot lane. Would red side first pick, open new draft strategies, etc.? So I guess the idea is if you, instead of getting side selection, or maybe it's like one side team gets side selection, the other team gets like pick selection or something, right? Like, so it could be independent of the side.
It's interesting because there's historical data, and I don't know how updated it is in season 10, but blue side has a higher win rate. It's like 54%.
I saw a tweet for this season, it's something like 26, 24 or something in LCS.
Yeah, even outside of LCS, even in just raw data, it's usually like 53% win rate.
Yeah, in pro play, it actually changes a lot more because pick order means more.
Yeah.
But there is actually difference because of the map, because of the camera angle. Mm-hmm. It's non-negligible, and that is kind of a compensating thing that they have for it. At least, like you're saying, we checked when it was 4 years ago even. So we might need an update, but there is a big, actually a numerical difference in what you can get because of the camera angle and because of Baron versus Dragon Pit.
Yeah, and you do swap sides and you should be playing 50-50 on both sides. So it doesn't actually, it shouldn't change your win rate. But in like a promo series, like, oh my God, I got three red side games, I got screwed. Or maybe you got four somehow, you know, like it can happen. It is one of those things I've heard talked about, even just the camera angle. I know League uses a lot of, and I don't know if they still do, but for a period of time, they used a lot of cheats as, you know, in programming about backface calling and like not drawing these polygons and not even making the models with them or something sometimes to save or not. It was like the Rift had this, not the champions. And so they were able to save a lot of counts to make it run on low end PCs. And then if you have to render both sides or even like load both sides in as memory, like whatever, it's getting too technical.
Yeah.
There's reasons that they don't swap the camera angle that would have tangible downsides if they added that functionality. So that way red side felt like they were playing on blue side.
Yeah.
But maybe it's worth the trade-off.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you guys think it would be cool? Even just thinking about it for pro play, right? It's like, I say, I want red side. And then you say, okay, so you're on blue side. Well, I actually want counter pick on blue side. I want last pick, right? You know, like that idea to me actually seems kind of cool for pro play. I think for solo queue, it's too complicated, and you know, having your team try to agree to this and stuff probably doesn't work. But I think it's at least a cool idea because, you know, the way you play, like I always think, you know, for top lane, playing top lane on red side, I think is actually like a lot harder. It feels like you're way more gankable, for example. So, you know, there's certain strategies that maybe you're more willing to go for if you can actually choose that side, and would be kind of interesting to see if teams could develop new strategies. But again, then you have the continuity between pro and solo queue and so on and so forth.
I mean, the idea is nice. I like the idea, kind of like in football, someone chooses if they kick or receive and the other person chooses the direction. Mm-hmm. So you can kick against the wind or like make the other person kick against the wind or whatever you're trying to do. I think it's an interesting idea. But I ultimately agree that I don't really know everything you're getting out of it.
So also, if you kind of touched on switching the camera angle too, even if we did go through a lot of work to be able to have people choose to switch camera angle, playing it with on different ones seems like it might be weird rather than keeping it consistent the whole time.
You mean, so like some players swap it upside down and some don't?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's as long as you get used to whichever your style is. Some people play on lock camera still, weirdos.
Yeah, I even hate watching people who have their mini map on the opposite side.
Oh yeah, you flip UI.
I think Skara does that, and it's from
Dota.
Yeah, and I played a lot of Dota as well, but I just got used to it when I changed, and now because it should be in this place, and everything is wrong if it's not in this place. When I tune in someone's stream and they don't have it there, I actually find it really hard to watch.
This is unrelated to any of the previous conversation except that last comment, but I also find it really hard to watch streamers that block the mini map
and I hate that,
hide names because it takes away from the theater of the entire experience.
I just
and now we're ranting on something else.
Yeah, now we're ranting about streamers. I don't care if it feels bad that you're getting ghosted. I don't care as a viewer. I want to see your friggin' mini-map because I want to see what's going on in the game. And I just can't see what's going on in the game.
How do you feel about the middle ground then? Because I hate when it's fully blocked, but I don't mind when people do the lane overlay thing that covers the jungle.
Still hate it.
I still hate it,
yeah.
It doesn't bother me as much.
The reason it bothers me is the same reason that they're doing it, because it's covering the information that I care about.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why they do it, and I get for your own sanity, you need to do what's best for you. But I'm just speaking for me then,
yeah.
That I hate it. I hate watching your games when I can't see what your jungler's doing.
Yeah.
And even worse, when I'm watching a jungler who's doing it, you know, like...
I agree.
They should just run it on a delay.
What camps are up? What should you be... Like, I don't know what...
A delay fixes the ghosting, but then you can't interact with
I understand. So. This is the lesser of two evils if you're trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I totally get why streamers do it. I just hate it.
Keep looking out for you, Mark. Look out for number one.
If you're looking out for you, I'm looking out for me. I'm using my watch time highlight message telling you to stop block.
Yeah. Spending all your Twitch channel points on
it. Yeah, I got a bunch of bits I'm going to donate to tell you to take my money and stop blocking.
All right, that's going to do it for us then. Thanks for tuning in for this episode of The Dive. The countdown is going to start at 1:30 this Saturday. Tune in because we have the literal number one team versus the literal number two team. Cloud9 versus FlyQuest.
Oh, I was late.
You were late.
We ended big. We ended real big.